Blog Talk Radio.
From the deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, the SRI Label Group, Wildlife Educational Services, and Blog Talk Radio present Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover with us the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we discover his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson. Welcome to Wild World on this magical network called Blog Talk Radio. It's always great to have you all along as we welcome around the world. It's so true, our listeners in England and Ireland, New Zealand. Great to have you with us this afternoon. Outstanding show. Ben McLean will be joining us a little bit. Entertainment attorney. We're going to talk particulars on the music business today. So this will be real interesting for your aspiring artist out there. And as always, from the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana, now HD, the honorable, distinguished, and always on time, very prompt, Dr. Henry Day. Good afternoon, Doc.
Good afternoon, Mr. Batson. You know, over the years, we have had a lot of young, inspiring musicians and singers on the show. This will be a great show for them.
It will be. I'm very fascinated about this. You know, the particulars of the music business, you know, it's just not getting up there and performing and that's it and go home. The music business is a tough business, and we're going to find out about today with Mr. McLean. And it should be very, very exciting. I'm looking forward to today's show.
As I am.
Are you ready?
As always.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Well, it's 33 degrees here in Indianapolis at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, we're going to start off with a follow-up story we did a few months ago, Cincinnati, Ohio. A federal judge has ruled in favor of the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden, finding that Nedumi, a gorilla it loaned to a California facility decades ago, should be returned. Now, the problem with this is Nedumi has been sick. He's been there for decades. He's very old, not feeling well, and they're afraid that if they ship him back to Cincinnati, Ohio, that he will not fare well. And that's a hard decision to make, but I guess the judge ruled in favor of Cincinnati.
Well, we'll see what happens. You know, usually if you have those gut feelings working with animals, you should follow those gut feelings. So if they have some doubt whether it would make the trip, I would say that gorilla is way too valuable. Just keep it where it's at.
I would have to agree with you. Yeah, that's a tough decision there. Now, last week we reported on the California Seal Patrol. Well, they're back to work. San Francisco. Now, tourists unable to visit a popular beach in Northern California that was taken over by a colony of nursing elephant seals during the government shutdown. Yeah, nobody there to chase them off the beach. Well, now the tourists will be able to get a close-up of the animals. Point Reyes National Seashore Rangers will begin leading small groups of visitors over the weekend to see the nursing seals.
Oh, cool. Well, that should be fun.
You know what? I was thinking, why don't they get the nurse sharks to do that?
Yeah, good point.
All right. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. Traverse City, Michigan. Listen to this. A gray wolf that was moved from Minnesota to Isle Royale National Park last fall has wandered back to the mainland. Yeah, trekking more than 15 miles across the frozen surface of Lake Superior.
Wow. That, that would be quite a trek. My goodness.
Oh, yeah. I got two thoughts on this. It probably had a rabbit and a couple of red squirrels tucked away somewhere and was thinking the entire trip, I got to get back. Or he could be looking for the man who shot his paw.
Oh, Oh, Dr. Day, your special day.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ben. Sorry. All right.
Yeah.
Now, tell me how you could make money after you hear this story. Austin, Texas. Rattlesnakes slithered through parts of the city this week to help promote an upcoming reptile roundup. Members of the Sweetwater JCs were in Austin on Tuesday to support what's billed as the world's largest rattlesnake roundup. How could you make money on that?
Oh, my gosh. That is such a horrendous thing. You know, these guys go out into the wilds of Texas and with gasoline and hoses and stick these hoses down in these rattlesnake dens and pour gasoline. The fumes drives them out, which will eventually be fatal for them. And then they take them into this festival where they're slaughtered in front of people and they cook the meat. It's just horrible. It's just
very brutal.
Oh, it's the worst. I mean, it's. And you see, there's no compassion there so much because it's snakes. No,
right.
if that was cute little seals or something, oh my gosh. But though there are protests there, believe me, there are protests, but nothing like if it was cute, cuddly, and adorable.
Right. So here's how you make a lot of money. You head to Austin with a truckload of mouse traps because they're going to need them after the rattlesnake roundup.
That's right. Mice, rabbits, all your rodents. That's right. Absolutely.
All right. We got a big baby on the way in Des Moines, Iowa. Ayanna and Keanu, the Blank Park Zoo's rare eastern black rhinos, are expecting their second baby in 3 years. Now, that's really
cool.
Good news. Yeah. Now, can you guess what the gestation period is for a black rhino?
Well, I should know that, but go ahead.
450 days.
At least it's not as long as an elephant.
Rhino, for a white rhino, it's 480 days.
It's a long time.
Now, do you remember what we call a herd of rhinos?
I forgot, Dr. Day. My gosh.
Yeah, we call that a crash.
That's
C-R-A-S-A.
Right.
And you can imagine why they call it a crash.
Yeah.
Well, you think about that. You think about rhinos having 480 days gestation, and a possum only has 13.
That's right. Yes.
Now, there's another cute animal.
Heading off
to Jackson, Wyoming, a herd of bison will be moved to new rangeland because they have gored multiple horses on private land within Grand Teton National Park. Yeah, so I wouldn't go horse riding, now anywhere near the park.
Bison are very testy. I mean, they've damaged a lot of stuff in Yellowstone and Grand Tetons.
That's
but they're
right.
There
and
first.
You know what I always say? Nothing smells like a wet buffalo.
That's true.
Check this story out. Erie, Pennsylvania, a National Geographic article features a local couple who spotted a rare bird in their yard. A half male, half female cardinal. Yeah. And the new National Geographic. Now, sooner or later, it'll probably end up on the Ellen Show.
Yeah, probably. I saw that picture. It's a wild-looking bird.
Yeah. Well, I hope you learned your lessons. New Orleans, Louisiana, the jaguar that escaped last summer and killed 9 animals is back on display at the Audubon Zoo.
Great.
Yeah, we don't ever want to see what happens again.
No.
All right, our local news. South Bend, Indiana, last week's deep freeze took a bite out of the Botanical Society of South Bend's collection of carnivorous plants. Feed me, Seymour. Yeah, now, a lot of people don't know that northern Indiana has cypress trees, cypress swamps. They have pitcher plants, Venus flytraps. Pretty interesting area, but we're sorry to hear that they lost some of their carnivorous plants there.
I had a friend years ago that had a cypress tree growing in his yard, or not, I should say, and he lived in northern Indiana, and they thought that was impossible, and he did. He actually had that growing in his pond.
Yeah, that's amazing. We have some wetlands there that are just unbelievable. All right, we're going to do the fact of the day before we go to who's gotten older. Now, I don't know if you've heard about this or not, but it seems that our magnetic poles are moving at a high rate. Earth's north magnetic pole has been drifting so fast in the last few decades that scientists say that the previous estimates are no longer accurate enough for precise navigation. Why is this a concern? Well, I'll tell you here in just a second. The magnetic north pole is wandering about 34 miles a year. It crossed the international date line in 2017 and is leaving the Canadian Arctic on its way to Siberia.
Oh.
Now, the military, as we know, depends on magnetic north for navigation, as do airplanes and boats. Now, the area now over South Atlantic has already reversed beneath the Earth's surface. Now, here's why this is a problem. It could bother some birds and animals that use magnetic fields to navigate. And overall, weakening of the magnetic field isn't good for us either.
No.
So they're estimating that, it could be 1,000 years from now, or it could be tomorrow.
Oh.
And if this would happen, there'd be a possibility that we'd have flamingos flying to Antarctica.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we don't want that.
No.
No. All right. Well, Ben, are you ready? It's time to play Who's Gotten Older?
I'm here.
It's the only thing you should know.
Yeah, your theme music isn't that good, Dr. Day.
Yeah, we'll have to work on that.
Yeah.
All right. Ben, here's how we play. I ask you a celebrity's name, and you should be good at this, I would think. You guys try to guess how old they got this past week.
Okay.
All right, we're going to start off today with Roberta Flack.
Oh, my God.
How old should I go first, or am I waiting for you there?
No, go ahead, Ben.
I would guess she's probably 69 years old, 70? She's probably older than that. She's probably in her early 70s, but I don't know. Do I have to give you an exact date? Age? 73.
Okay, I'll say 79.
Oh, well, Mr. Batson, you got a little closer on this one. Roberta actually turned 82.
Oh. Oh, my.
Yeah. See, I wouldn't have guessed very well on that one either. All right, one of my favorites of all times, singer Carole King.
I think she's got to be late 70s. I'd say 77.
I'll say 71.
Oh, Ben hit it right on the nose.
Oh.
Carole turned 77 February the 9th.
I hate this game.
Okay. I've actually met her. She ages well. I've met her.
What an incredible
artist. Oh, my God.
And she's
okay, gentlemen. How old did Alice Cooper turn this week?
I'd say he's 74.
I'll say 78.
Ooh, Alice is going to be mad at you. Alice turned 71 this week.
God, I'm losing. I'm losing. I'm losing.
He's still out there.
Yeah, he is. And I'm losing. Not good.
All right. Singer Vince Neil of Motley Crue had a birthday this week.
I'd say Vince is probably 59.
I'll say 66.
Whoa. Well, I'm afraid Ben got you on that one, too. Vince turned 58 this past week.
Oh.
Okay, let's see how good you do on this last one. Axl Rose of Guns N' Roses.
Oh, my Lord.
He can't
I had to mix it up a little
this.
Bit.
I'd say Axl's probably 57.
I'll say 64.
Did you say 57, Ben?
Yeah.
Hit it right on the nose.
Oh.
Yep. Well, Mr. Batson, it's 4-1. I'm afraid you've lost another one.
Oh, I hate this game. I just hate it. Just hate it. Don't like it at all. Besides that, I hate it. Tell Ben what he won.
Well, sure. Ben, since you did so good, your punishment is you have to be on the show again.
Okay.
Yeah.
A punishment, not a prize. Okay.
All right, before we get out of here, I've got one more thing. If you want to tear the roof off, this is your last chance. Milwaukee, Wisconsin. For George Clinton, the beginning of the end will be in Milwaukee. The Funk Master is kicking off his final tour with Parliament Funkadelic on May 30th at the Miller High Life Theater.
Oh, that'll be a party.
If you've never seen George, it's something else. Now, I saw the Mothership land in the early 70s, and it was an experience. And you know what? I was wondering if Bootsy Collins is still wearing a diaper. I'm not sure if I'd want to see that.
I don't know. No,
Bootsy also announced he's retiring. Is he part of that tour, this final tour, or do you know?
Yeah, he's hanging out with the boys.
Okay.
Well, that's the Wild World News for February the 10th.
Well, once again, a great job done by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana, all HD, absolutely beautiful in the Knotty Pine paneling. Gives you such wonderful acoustics, Dr. Day. Your staff is just unbelievable. We'd also like to thank the SRI Label Group in Los Angeles, California. They're our underwriter for Wild World, and check out their website, srirecords.com. Country, blues, jazz, rock, it's all there. Incredible collection brought by Shelley Leibowitz, the SRI Label Group. They make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
And money.
Entertainment attorney Ben McLean has written a book titled Music Business and 10 Easy Lessons, giving artists an insight to how to build a music career. He's with us this week on Wild World, and that's the only song I could find that had lawyers in it. Except,
that's a good one, though.
It was a toss up between that and Lawyers in Love, Jackson Browne.
Yeah, that's Jackson Browne. Yeah, you know those guys.
Yeah.
A lot, like I said.
They did. Yeah, absolutely. They did. I want to hear your Carole King story, Ben, before we go any further.
Oh, well, it's not that exciting, really. I was at one of those BMI Pop Award celebration dinner, you know, cocktail party thing. And she was, I'm sure she was up for some, she had so many hit songs that she gets awards probably every year because they continue to play on the radio. But she was getting some awards, so she was there, and she was just standing by herself for just a second. So I just went over and introduced myself. And, you know, it's hard to know what to say to somebody like that. I've never worked with her, probably never will, but, you know, and I'm sure she hears things like that all the time, how great she is. But it was just cool to meet her. And, you know, she's, you know, seems, you know, she just looked great. She's very, you know, she's, to me, I'm not very tall, but she seemed very, very tiny. But that was just my story. It was just a brief meeting, but I did get to see her in person, so that was cool. But that, but not a performance. She just was there hanging out.
Well, it's still a touch of greatness. I mean, my gosh, that is greatness. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I even got to meet briefly also. The guy, Jerry Goffin, who she was married to and wrote a lot of those songs with early on. One night I was at the Whiskey for some event, and there were some celebrities there, and Jerry Goffin was there. But this wasn't that many years ago, really, maybe, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago. And then he passed away soon after that. But he wasn't quite that talkative, really. So I don't, but it was, again, I got to shake his hand anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, what the heck? So you go to law school, and, you know, there's so many different things that one can specialize in being a lawyer. What drew you to the entertainment business, music business?
Well, I came to Los Angeles to actually work in the entertainment business. I grew up in Kansas, so I didn't really have any friends or family in the business. I didn't know how to get into the business, really. So when I was in college, with a business degree, I was starting to do some research. You know, in those days, there was no internet, so there were maybe a few books about the music business, and I was reading that lawyers and accountants and people like that can have jobs in the business. But I really was interested in artist management. So when I came out here, I went to law school at Pepperdine, but I really wanted to become an artist manager. But again, I didn't know anybody, so I figured if you had a law degree, it was easier to work your way into the business. So, and they don't really teach entertainment law, per se, at law schools. They might have a class on copyright or something, but really it's all, you just kind of have to go out and learn it on your own. If you're lucky enough to work at a record company or maybe be hired into one of those big law firms that rep a lot of the big artists like Michael Jackson or Madonna or whatever. But I didn't really, neither of those paths really opened up for me. So I did work in management for a while, and then I also was practicing law just at some firms that didn't really do entertainment. You know, it was just kind of, I was just kind of starting to go out to clubs and try to meet people and network on my own. And eventually I just opened my own law office. The management thing didn't really work out. I had some good artists, but none of them were really making any money. So I just became a full-time entertainment attorney focusing on music primarily. But, it, you know, it was just a lot of just learning as you go. And that's sort of how I've ended up where I'm at now, but it's 25 years later now.
Ben, where'd you grow up in Kansas?
Near Wichita. It's a suburb called Derby. I don't know if anybody
Well,
knows.
I lived in Wichita for a while, Atchison, and I was born in Leavenworth.
Oh, well, you probably don't know Derby, but it's a suburb just a little south of there, maybe 15 minutes. Which is, when I lived there, or when I first moved there in like 1971 or whatever it was tiny, 9,000 people. I think it's maybe got 30,000 people now, but it's, you know, Wichita and Derby sort of grown together. Now you can't even, it's like there's no separation, really.
Yeah.
Last time I went there, which hasn't been for a couple of years.
Well,
no music. There's no entertainment business there that I knew of, anyway. There's maybe some bars or bands play cover tunes, but I had to move to, you have to move to L.A., New York, or Nashville, really, even now, I'm sure, to really be in the business, because that's where it's, now Atlanta's pretty big now, too, but it used to be, you know, New York, L.A., Nashville. You had to go to one of those places.
And it's, you know, it's the same old thing. It's not what you know, it's who you know and getting that lucky contact.
Well, there's a lot of, I mean, that's what I tell young people getting in. You really just have to network like crazy. You have to do good work, but you really have to be personable and willing to go out and talk to strangers and just, you know, be outgoing and meet a lot of people. I mean, people I met 25 years ago I still work with today.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to maintain relationships too, which is not easy. And there's a lot of turnover in this business. And so,
sure.
But it's a big part of it is, yeah, that knowing people and meeting people. And then if you do good work, you get recommended. I mean, most of my business comes to word of mouth and recommendations, really, at this point.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm a young artist, and I walk into your office one morning, and I've played a few jobs. I've been approached by a couple of record companies, haven't really did anything yet, but I want to talk to an entertainment lawyer. What would your first conversation be with that particular artist?
Well, it varies, you know, because some people come to me and they already have some kind of offer on the table and they really need to buy some way. Should take it, negotiate it. They need a lawyer to negotiate it, of course, make sure they don't sign a bad paper. But a lot of people are not at that stage. They're just, they want to get there and they want to know how you get there and what can a lawyer do to help. And I mean, in my career, I've helped some people get record deals and publishing deals because I know people in the A&R community that will listen to things if I ask them to. But a lot of time the artist really needs to still maybe build up their career a little bit more, maybe, you know, write some more songs or have a little more presence, live performance, or just be tight. These days, of course, with the internet, labels kind of expect artists to have a social media presence, which they didn't used to, you know, require. Now they do. So that's something else the artists really have to, today, they have to have a website and Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that. They, you know, because if you don't have those things, it makes you look like you're not curious as an artist. And then also, if you have those things and there's no activity, there's no buzz on it, and there's no fans at all, then that's also a negative, which is kind of sucks sometimes because, I mean, I've met some very talented people, and for whatever reason, they're not connecting with fans. And then labels kind of look at that and go, well, you know, if you're not connecting, there must be something wrong with you, so we don't want to take a risk. Where they used to just do things like, wow, this is an artist that sounds great, they have great songs, and we'll take a chance on that. But, you know, I'm not being negative. It's just the whole model's changed a little bit about how you get deals. But it still comes down to great songs and talent and a great voice and somebody with a personality. And you know, it's helpful if they also have a manager maybe that can help them, guide them. Because I'm a lawyer. I'm not really a manager, even though I used to do that. And I know what managers do. I just don't want to be a manager. So sometimes I try to help artists maybe align themselves with a manager or a booking agent or somebody else that can help them, you know, that, and then maybe a team is created because that's, you know, if you have a team around you, it's a lot easier to get from point A to point B, but sometimes the lawyer is the first person on the team.
Basically, it's a miracle that the Beatles ever got out there, huh?
Well, they remember. They had a really good manager named Brandstein who worked really hard. And, of course, they were in a smaller pond over in England. There were only a couple record labels in those days, if I understand correctly. And they were different for the time. You know, if you listen to stuff that was going on before them, it was, you know, they were, I'm sure they sounded weird. As talented as they were, you know, most people passed on them from what I understand. But one thing they did that I think was smart, they played a lot. You know, apparently those guys did, you know, over 1,000 gigs or something before they ever got signed, you know, which is a lot of artists don't have that kind of work ethic. So that was an important element that they had.
Well, they did. They did work very, very hard. We're talking to Ben McLean about the music business. A lot of great stuff I have in mind, but we're going to take a short break. You are listening to Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
SRI Jazz is proud to present their newest release, This Is Ray Brown Jr. That's right, Ella Fitzgerald's son continues to entertain audiences with his warm and charming vocals, making this one of the best vocal jazz albums of the year. Here are some sample tracks from the album. Visit our website to hear all of them in their entirety. Just go to srirecords.com or click on the banner in your media player now.
It's wonderful, marvelous. You should care for me. Awful nights, paradise, what I love to see. My baby, when she walks by, all the fellas go, I know why. Simply 'cause that girl's so fine. If she'd ever leave me, I'd lose my mind. She's got the kind of loving, kissing and a hugging. Sure he's mellow, glad that I'm a fella. And I know, 'cause she knocked me off my feet. Have mercy on me. I know for certain, one I love. I'm through with flirting. It's you that I'm thinking of. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love. Oh, you must take the A-train to go to Sugar Hill, way up in all.
You've been listening to a few sample tracks from the new album, This Is Ray Brown Jr. You can hear all the songs in their entirety at srirecords.com. Support jazz music today at srirecords.com. Consideration provided by SRI Jazz.
SRI Records is our underwriter here on Blog Talk Radio. And from the SRI label collection from 1965, here's Peter Noon.
Something good, I'll be honest. Something she's the kind of girl. Hi, everyone. This is Shelley Newports. You're listening to my friend Larry Batson's Wild, Wild World on Wild Talk Radio.
That's right. Ben McLean is our guest this week, entertainment attorney. We're talking the music business. In his new book, Music Business and 10 Easy Lessons. And the music business is hard work, isn't it, Ben?
Well, any business is, but it is hard. It's fickle, you know, and there's a lot of rejection. And especially if you're a new artist in the pop world, it's very age conscious. You know, if you don't make it when you're young, it's kind of unlike other jobs. The older you get and the wiser you get, the better your job opportunities are. It's kind of different in
sure.
music, unless you're already famous. If you're the Stones, they're going to work forever. But remember, they made it when they were young. So that's kind of a negative of the business. But that I'm sure that's true of film, television, modeling, anything else like that.
It's a pretty fickle business. I mean, I can't imagine these young art. Of course, now they have such great promotional tools, as you mentioned, all the social media outlets, things like YouTube and all that. It's just, I mean, and I've said this before on the program, that if the Beatles would have come out now, per se, and with the social media outlets and all the promotion they could do, that we thought they were big then, they would be astronomical now. I mean, it would be just incredible.
Well, if Kim Kardashian can be as big as she is, then I'm sure the Beatles would hopefully be even bigger than that.
How does that happen?
It's just cult of personality or something. But obviously, the Kardashian people know how to work social media and promote themselves. That's for sure. But yeah, the Beatles would, because I think they have a wider appeal and they make music. Because I don't want to flag her. I don't know what kind of abilities she has on a professional level other than just being famous or whatever. But the Beatles are actually creatively created, you know, talented. So I hope they'd be even bigger than that. But then maybe we'd all get burned out on them. I mean, I didn't grow up in those days. I mean, I remember in the 80s when Prince was so big, I got sick of Prince because every time I turned on the radio, it was either Prince or a song Prince wrote or produced. But now that, you know, now that I don't hear him as much, I appreciate him more. I don't know if it was like that with the Beatles because they were so massive in the 60s. Yeah.
Well, just to give you some insight on the Beatles, because I grew up during that heyday, that many times you would not know a new album was out until you went to the record store like the Kresge's or JCPenney's and discovered it. I mean, the promotion was nothing like it is now.
So even then, you know, I would think that between radio and a couple of TV stations you could watch, they did get a lot of coverage. The Beatles did.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not at the very beginning, but once they were famous. I mean, now there's so many media outlets and channels that you can easily get lost, although some people even can control all that, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm sure it's different, and probably did friends recommend things a lot in those days too, where you'd find out through word of mouth.
Well, it was weird, Ben, because you essentially go to a record store, you'd be looking through the Beatles section. Oh, and go, oh, a new album. Didn't know that was out. And and it was crazy. And then, of course, Dick Clark, the American Bandstand, that's where he usually heard the new Beatles singles and got introduced to the world. So all that. But anyway, so.
I know people that were promotional people in those days, and they tell me that they were trying to pre-promote things at radio and with press and things. Mm-hmm. But there just weren't as many channels. You know, there weren't as many magazines or stations or that there are now, but yeah, now you find out about something. In fact, more so with movies, when I go see movies now, sometimes they'll be promoting there'll be a trailer for a movie that isn't coming out for over a year later, and they're already showing the trailer for it. It's crazy. And then like Taylor Swift will pre-sell tickets for a tour that she's not going to have for a year and a half. You know, it's crazy. But I mean, you know, that how far things extend out now.
And just think of all the money that's made via interest on those pre-sold tickets. It's got to be.
Oh, yeah, somebody's making money, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, obviously. The reason I was not to get on the subject too much, but I can still remember the story about Brian Epstein talking to some guys with T-shirts that wanted to put out some Beatle T-shirts. And when they walked into that meeting with their shirts, they were prepared to give the Beatles 55%. They figured that's probably what would be the deal. And they showed Brian the shirts, and he observed them. He says, well, he says, I'm going to tell you something right now. We will not take less than 25%.
Well, by the way, just as a lawyer negotiator, and I'm not saying I'm the world's best negotiator, because I'm not, but I always like to hear what the other side is going to propose first before I say anything, because you might undersell or way oversell and then scare them. So it's always better to ask, you know, and then sometimes people refuse to say, so you're forced into it. But yeah, he should have listened to what they had to say. But what, you know, I can't fault the guy, because I'm sure he did great things for them. Other than that.
Yeah, he brought us the Beatles. That was very cool.
And well, they didn't have the industry standards then. They didn't have the industry standards. Now you would know, a guy like him would know going into that meeting what the industry standard is, and probably get a better deal because the Beatles are, well, because they're already hot, you know. But I don't know. Yeah, in those days, that the business was being made up as we went along, you know.
Sure. Well, and think of, God bless the attorneys in the entertainment field now, in the music business, because think of all the artists, especially many of the old blues artists of the 50s and 60s that lost so much money because they just didn't have very good deals.
I like to read a lot about the history of the music business, but even in the 70s and into the 70s, a lot of artists still didn't use lawyers. There weren't that many lawyers. Now lawyers are on every corner, and there's no deal without a lawyer involved. But in those days, a lot of artists just did things on their own, or they used some manager who was their brother or dad or something who didn't know anything. So it's just, they got bad deals.
So how's the record
today? I spend a large proportion of what I do getting people out of bad. People still sign bad deals, but that's a big part of what I do is trying to get people out of things that didn't work out.
So tell us, because I know there's people interested in this. Tell us how a record deal gets put together.
Well, the first thing, I mean, labels still exist, and with streaming kind of taking off, the companies like the Sonys and the Warners and the Universals, the big conglomerates, they're bigger than ever because they have huge catalogs that are streaming every day all over the world, so they're making money. So they're actually, the business is actually pretty healthy at the moment. There are some new independent labels. 10 years ago or so, when the internet started, when nobody was buying music because they were just ripping it off the internet for free, a lot of labels closed down or really cut back. But it's coming back. So there's more optimism in the sense that more people are getting signed again. So that's good. But usually because of social media presence, a lot of labels kind of want to see is there X number of Facebook friends? Is there X number of YouTube views? Whatever. So that's why you have to have content out there. And the more content, the better. If you have 50 videos up, even if it's just lyric videos or just you goofing around, they don't have to be full-on contest videos. But as long as if you have 50 videos up, you're bound to get more views, and those get compiled together. So to me, it's about volume now. It isn't just doing one video a year or something like it used to have been. So, I mean, that's one thing you can do to try to build up your presence. But assuming that some A&R person or somebody at a label, an A&R is the person that signs the artist who discovers the artist and repertoire, they call it A&R. They used to go to the clubs a lot. Now they kind of wait for people to tell them about things, so they find it on the internet. Assuming they discover something that they really like, great songs, great vocal, great look, young, and a social media presence, then they'll offer it a deal, which is usually a multi-album deal. Most of the labels then and now still want to sign artists to multiple album deals, even though a lot of times they're not even making albums anymore. It's just going up digitally, 10 songs, and then people just take the singles. But they still make deals on albums. So, like say Columbia Records, which is still around, would offer a new artist, if they were excited about them, a 5-album deal. But they really only are committing to one album, and then they have options for four more if things go as planned. And, you know, and the artist gets an advance to live off of. They get a budget to record the album. And then if the record sells or streams or gets licensed to film and television, they'll make a royalty.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's a promotional device, the record is, for the artists. Most of the artists I work that make real money, unless you're Drake or somebody like that, or Rihanna, that just has so many people streaming their music, they make most of their money on the road, touring and selling T-shirts, merchandise, like the Beatles thing you're talking about. Merchandise.
Yeah.
That's really where all the money is. But even then, you have to have some kind of fame before people come to your show and buy your T-shirt. But there's bigger profit size to the artists for that. So I mean, that's, you know, the way record deals have come about, I don't think it's changed since the 50s, although, you know, it used to be more of a singles business, and it's sort of going back to that. I mean, I'm doing a lot of deals now for more with independent labels where they'll just do a single, or they'll just do one album or one EP. They don't even necessarily ask for any optional albums. But the bigger companies work the same way they always did. But it's really about having a hit song. You know, if you don't have a hit song, then nobody cares.
It's over.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, of course the genres are different. You're talking about country, pop, R&B, whatever it is. You know, it has to be a hit song in that genre. And they
crossover.
Like the biggest example would be like Florida Georgia Line had this song last year called Meant to Be, and then the BB Rexha girl, who's a R&B pop singer, sang on it with a country accent, and it was at number one 50 weeks on the country charts, and it got to number two on the pop chart. It was probably the biggest song of the year, and it was like a hip-hop pop girl with two country guys. Yeah. So, I mean, that never would have happened 10 years ago.
No. Well, country music has changed so much. In fact, I've always said that if you turn on the radio and you're in the middle of the song where they're just playing instruments, a lot of times you have to wait for them to start singing to decide whether it's a rock or a country song.
Yeah, and a lot of country songs, you used to be able to tell it was twangy. You'd hear, you know, banjos or slide guitar, steel pedal or whatever. But, yeah, now it's just, I don't know. Yeah, just I think it's because of streaming and global, you know, with YouTube, everybody all over the world can enjoy music. There's just a lot of blending of. There is a lot of blending of genres now. So that's an interesting twist in the business where, you know, that, like I said, that 10 years ago, you kind of had to be in a box, and now there's a lot more flexibility to cross over to things.
Wow. I saw one of the Crossroads shows that CMT does, and I'm thinking, gosh, I'm trying to think who the two artists was, but the one artist looked at the country guy and said, well, basically, you guys are playing rock music with a twang. So,
yeah, well, this was the first time I really paid attention. This is probably like 15 years ago now, but Bon Jovi had a big hit called Who Says You Can't Go Home, probably fit with the girl from Sugarland. And that was Bon Jovi going country. And it just was Bon Jovi, like he always sounded, but it had just a little bit more twang to it, but it was really just rock, you know?
Well, yeah, but Jennifer Nettles, it's because she definitely has a twang to her voice, that's for sure.
Yeah, her, that's right. She was the girl on it, right.
Well, it's a complicated business. I mean, I have sympathy for these young artists, and you see them all the time on YouTube and Facebook, and it's a challenge to the music, well, anything in the entertainment industry. And as you mentioned earlier, get used to being rejected because it'll happen probably for every one time, 10 times it'll be nope, or even more than that, I should say. Sorry, we're not interested. So it would be tough. I mean, my gosh.
Well, I don't know if it's any tougher now than it ever was. You know, I'm sure it was always tough. So, if you want to make it, you have to be serious and you have to stick with it. It isn't going to happen overnight. I mean, because I love to read the story, these signing stories. Anytime anybody gets a record deal, I want to read about how they got the record deal. And more times than not, you know, it was a 5 to 10 year trajectory path before they got there.
Mm-hmm.
They started young. You know, they did. But
sure.
It does not happen overnight, typically, even today.
What kind of music do you listen to, Ben?
Oh, I've always liked rock, pop, alternative rock. I'm probably more of a rock guy, but you know, because I'm a lawyer and I work in all genres, I represent a lot of, you know, hip hop artists, jazz artists, some country artists, not that much because I'm not in Nashville, but I think I understand rock a little more just because that's what I grew up listening to. So, but I have to understand, you know, so if I listen to all styles just to try to keep current, but I think I probably gravitate more towards rock or alternative rock.
Is it ethical? I can't even say it. Cool for you to say some of the artists you've worked with?
Well, you know, I've been doing this so long. I mean, I have a website which kind of lists everybody I've repped or done.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I do. It's on it's just benmclane.com, my name.com, BENMCLANE.com. I have a website that kind of lists who we've represented or been involved with, but it's so many now, you know, and I'm always excited about the new stuff we're working with too, just because we're hoping that's the start of tomorrow, but, and we do have a few of those, you know, but we always kind of have a mix of some classic artists that are established and some artists that are kind of new and up and coming. So I'm sure that's true for everybody, but it definitely is for me. But I'm not a big firm either. You know, we're a two-attorney firm, and we're not one of these big conglomerate firms with hundreds of lawyers. And so, you know, we tend to get more independent artists thrown our way, or just because that's just the nature of the business, really, for me. And some of those artists end up becoming big, and a lot of them just kind of stay low level. And, you know, and not everybody's meant to be huge, and some people don't want to be huge. They just want to have a career. And you can have a career. I mean, you can make X number of dollars a year and pay your bills and be comfortable, and you're not a celebrity. You're not a star, but you have a fan base. You can make records, and you can tour and make your own schedule, and you're not, you know, I can't imagine what it's like to be Taylor Swift or somebody like that. Just the demands on her, probably every day of the year. To me, it would be overwhelming. So a lot of people probably aren't equipped really to be big celebrities because it's probably so draining, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Getting back to the Beatles, George Harrison said they gave up their nervous systems to be Beatles. So it was,
Well, I do have. Just a few months ago, I worked for a guy who manages, he manages a couple artists. Edgar Winter's one, who I do work for Edgar Winter, but the guy also manages Ringo Starr, and puts together these, you know, the all-star band tours. And so Ringo was playing, well, he said, "Hey, do you want to meet Ringo?" I was like, "Yeah, of course." And my daughter's a big Beatles fan. So for her birthday, I took her to San Jose, where Ringo was playing. It was a smaller venue because in L.A. it would have been too hard to meet him. But he came backstage and spent like 15 minutes talking to us, and just the nicest guy. I mean, you wouldn't have known it was a Beatle. I mean, the way it was just the coolest meeting scene, you know. So but I can't imagine. Ringo's probably met so many people in his life, because when you think about all the things they've had to do and all the tours. But I don't know. I mean, you know, it just takes a certain kind of personality to be able to do all of that for so many years. I can't. But, I mean, I just was very impressed with the way he acted and, you know, was just a cool guy.
Yeah, well, that's the ultimate touch with greatness right there. I'm going to tell you that right now. That's outstanding.
Yeah. Well, that's what a great. We drove all the way up there to meet him and spent the night. And then the next day we had to drive back to Orange County to see Fall Out Boy, who's a newer band at Anaheim. But it was worth it, you know, just to meet Ringo or say you met a Beatle, because I don't, you know, those opportunities are so rare. And Paul McCartney is just, I think he's just impossible to probably get to meet.
Yeah. That would be a challenge. What a wonderful show, Dr. Day.
Yeah, well, we knew it was going to be exciting, and we wanted to learn. We wanted to know more about it. Hey, gentlemen, I've got a surprise for you. We got Dave Davies on the line. He wanted to say hi. He has a question.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Hold on. I forgot. Hold on. We'll get Dave.
Hello.
I just wanted to say, wanted to check in and say, I wish Bang would have been around when we put the Kinks together. It would have been a lot easier for us. Because I wouldn't have to sue my brother.
Yeah.
Okay, Larry, I've got a question for you, and I'll be gone.
Yeah,
I don't mean
sure.
to keep you. Would you rather be trapped in a well with a porcupine or a guy playing the bagpipes?
I'd go for the bagpipes. I like bagpipes, so that's an easy one.
I think I'd go for the porcupine.
You like being poked, eh?
Eh?
Oh, gentlemen, I just wanted to say hi.
Well, you know, yeah, Mr. McLean, how's your dealings with your brother? Maybe Ben could be of help with that.
Oh, well, we can't actually be in the same room together, so it's really hard. We still hit pretty hard, so we try not to be together unless we have to.
Oh, I see. Well, that's just great.
We'll keep making music.
Yeah, make it. Well, that was awful nice of Dave to call in. I almost forgot about Dave today.
He usually checks in every week. It's always nice to hear from him. Dave is special.
Yes, he is special. What a great show, Ben. Wonderful. We've got to do this again sometime.
Yeah, I agree.
Anytime.
I think we just touched
the
surface.
Did you guys have anything else you thought an artist might need to know or want to know? Just if there's any time left, I'm happy to share.
Well, I can think of a million things. That's the problem.
The book that I wrote, Business 10 Easy Lessons, where you can get it on Amazon, either it's an ebook or a paperback. But I mean, I took the 10 things that in my years of doing this, that kind of newer artists, there's a pattern to these about 10 things that seem to pop up or that people always want advice about or need help with at that level. So I kind of just, that's where the 10 things came from, whether it's how you get a record deal, how you work with a manager, how you find an investor, how you to file a copyright and a trademark, those kind of basic things. So hopefully, and it's an easy-to-read book, so hopefully it helps people. But a lot of stuff's in there that we didn't cover on this show.
Yeah. Well, Music Business and 10 Easy Lessons, and I did read it. It's fantastic. So copyright, trademarks, band agreements, publishing, music licensing, management, record deal, royalties, distribution, investors. Gosh, it makes me tired just thinking about it.
Well,
thank you, Ben.
Well, thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
And you want who's gotten older? You have to come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, let me know. I'll try to win next time, too.
There we go.
Tell Harvey Decaf.
Tell Harvey Decaf. Will he know what you mean?
Yeah.
Decaf.
I'll tell him. Do you think Harvey's listening by any chance?
Well, there's a if he's not listening live, and you can download the show anytime, and you can listen to it after the fact. He will listen, I guarantee it.
We're talking about Harvey Kubernick, who's a great author.
Yes, Harvey Kubernick, the book machine, unbelievable. The amount of books.
Puts him out.
Yes, he does. You've been listening to Wild World on Blog Radio.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. We'll be right back.
This is Shelley Leibowitz. You're listening to my friend Larry Batson's Wild, Wild World on Raw Talk Radio.